Lady P.D. James is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. I said that Bill Russell could join, and here he is.
I came to your work afresh, knowing that we would have a chance to talk with you. I had not read any of your work before, and there's a tendency to think of mystery writers as crime writers as being a sort of subclass that's not quite up to specs. Mm-hmm. And one of the striking things about both your fiction, but also your what you call a fraction of an autobiography
fragment.
Is the quality of the writing. It is strikingly good writing. It is good literature. Mm-hmm. And that's a little surprising because we think this is just entertainment, that there's really not more to it than that.
Yes, I mean, I think we are quite right in thinking that the detective novel, perhaps entertainment, yes, entertainment, relaxation, it's a popular form, but I think it can also be literature. I think that probably the crime novel is less well regarded here in the States than it is in England. There are some extremely good writers writing in England in this genre. Ruth Rendell is another, for example.
And has been for generations.
And have been for quite a time, absolutely. For a very long time. And of course, you know, one doesn't want to sound conceited, but it's very difficult for me ever to feel I'm dealing in inferior genre when I've got 6 honorary doctorates of literature, a doctor of literature of the universities of London, Glasgow, and 4 others, and also was chairman of the Booker Judges for the most prestigious literary prize, was president of the Society of Authors, and sits in the House of Lords. So it's awfully difficult if anyone tried to persuade me I was dealing with an inferior form of literature.
But in fact, you do raise the bar, don't you? Mm. Isn't that part of your sense mission?
Well, I have in a sense. I suppose, obviously good writing is tremendously important to me, and I can't read a book, however exciting and however good the plot. If the writing is poor, I just can't read it. And I suppose my credo as a writer is what I'm trying to do is to give people a good, exciting and credible mystery story, unambiguously set in its time and place, which is at the same time a good novel with the psychological subtleties we expect of a good novel, and which is extremely well written. And I think that's what my fans value. This is a very popular form, as you know, probably the most popular form of popular literature. And there are thousands of people out there, some of the best educated of citizens of both our countries who love it, but they want it well written.
Millions,
and they want it well written.
We have a good friend who is a cellist, who's a world-class musician, an instrumentalist, and he points out regularly that he is very good, but when you start trying to figure out who the best is, that it's extraordinarily difficult because there are different criteria. And you mentioned the Booker Prize as an example, trying to select what is the finest fiction would seem to be extraordinarily difficult, and I would think it has something to do with fads and particularly with taste.
Absolutely, Bill, absolutely. I mean, in effect, you can't do it because, as I've often said, I mean, it's lovely for people to win the book, and one year I chaired the judges, and it was very tough. You have to read over 100 novels over the summer, and at the end of that time, I mean, you wonder if you can make judgment at all. And fads and taste do come in, and all you can say with these kind of prizes, talking of the Booker, is that 5 judges at one particular time felt that this shortlist was the 5 best novels and this was the best novel of the year. But after all, what decides what is the best novel of the year will be very much how the work lasts. And when you look at the Booker list over the 20 years, you think, are these really the 20 best novels of the last 20 years? So I think it's no good. You're so right. You just can't say this is the best novel. Or you can say this is a very good novel. This is the one these 5 people happen to choose. And you get compromises, don't you, really? With any set of judges, you get people. And sometimes those are the best books that 1 or 2 judges will loathe and won't well, even consider.
And it may be before its time. I think particularly as one sits in England with the astonishing heritage of splendid writing, and you and I share an enthusiasm for Jane Austen, to be in the shadow of Jane Austen and to be declared the best book of the year, maybe you're just out of phase.
Well, as there certainly have been some decisions that seem to me really quite perverse. But of course...
So I guess we should not necessarily pick just by the judge's decisions.
No, we shouldn't. It's regarded as being rather a compliment to be asked to be a judge.
Of course.
And to be chairman of the judges, but to say that you actually have chosen the best book of the year, that's going much too far, I think. Really. But of course, like all literary prizes, it does stimulate interest in fiction. There's a great deal of publicity surrounds it. I'm sure that the press always hope that, you know, that there's going to be huge dissension, huge quarrels, you know, blood on the carpet and trouble.
But then you'd have to write a book, wouldn't you?
You'd have to write a book. But it does, you know, it does promote interest in reading, and to that extent, it's good.
One of the striking things about reading your work, I think goes to the importance of whatever form you choose to write in, it's the quality of the writing. It's the striking differences, just day-to-day diurnal difference between England and the United States. Just, you know, we tend to think of ourselves as at least cousins, if not brothers, and we tend to assume a lot that they're mostly similarities, and that the major difference is a difference in accent.
Yeah.
But just the day-to-day routines, as you represent them, are strikingly different.
Yes. Day-to-day routine of ordinary living, are you saying, Bill?
As opposed to the stereotypes.
Yes, I suppose this must be so. And, of course, I read American books. We imagine we understand each other. Partly, as they say, we're separated by a common language. So much of the culture, I mean, your criminal law is largely based on our criminal law, isn't it? Obviously some differences, but largely based on it. And, of course, we've been so influenced by your culture. I mean, mainly, presumably, through film. Of course.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And those early films were tremendously influential. I mean, I'm thinking back to my childhood, the films we saw were American films,
mm-hmm.
long before our film industry got underway, and they continued to be the best. So really, English people had some idea of what was happening over here, probably more so than Americans had of our country.
I was quite taken as I was reading Time to Be in Earnest, which is your fragment of an autobiography. These day-to-day differences of which Bill speaks, you don't drive, and it affects how your days go.
Yes.
You got together with one of your best friends, and this just stopped me in my tracks. And the way you spent the day was you went to church,
yes,
and it was high church, I think,
yes,
and then you went home, and together you gardened. And it was a fine day. It was a memorable day that you wanted me to know about in the book.
Yes.
Well, I stopped, and I thought, what a wonderful way to spend a day with a friend, to go dig in the dirt together.
Absolutely.
But I don't think that that would be a common thought here in the U.S.
And the ability to get around without a car. I mean, you manage pretty well.
Yes, I don't drive. I did drive for a time. I lived for a short time in the Irish Republic in Dublin, and there you could drive on an L plate. Unaccompanied, and this I did for a little time, but I never took a test, and it would be silly to start driving.
You have
now
driven on the Thames,
absolutely. Oh, indeed, I've driven on the Thames, and of course in London particularly. I mean, I do sometimes regret that I didn't drive, but I find now that living in central London, it's hardly necessary, and I do just hire a car and a driver when I need one. But yes, I don't think you could live in this city, could you? You couldn't live in most American cities unless you drove. We'll possibly live, I imagine, in Boston without driving, and possibly in San Francisco without driving, and in Manhattan, couldn't you? In New York, in Manhattan.
Well, that's true.
I'm not sure you could live anywhere else much without being seriously inconvenienced.
Yeah. And that may be true of much of the world.
Increasingly so, I'm sure. Yes, increasingly so. I think you can live in Paris without driving, of course.
Yeah.
I love to live in a city where I can walk. Love a walkable city.
It changes your relationship to the city, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and to its people. And in London, really, it's a great city, but it is a little collection, really, of villages, almost in a sense, of towns, of communities, of neighbourhoods. And I'm really very central in Holland Park, but I can go outside, and I have every possible shop I would need within 2 minutes walking distance. as well as a tube station and buses and a post office and a dry cleaners and everything else that I need.
This is a model.
Absolutely wonderful.
A model we might follow. Lady P.D. James is the Baroness of Holland Park. She is also our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I invite you to be with us when we return.